but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest is a model of courage, resilience, and empowerment. Brenda Tracy, who was the survivor of a sex assault in 1998 and turned that into a positive and became an advocate who changed laws and changed minds and opened hearts and spoke in front of legislatures and lawmakers and changed the statute of limitations on the crime of sex assault and went around the country challenging programs, particularly football programs, to do better. Brenda Tracy, as you know, has been mixed up in what happened at Michigan State with Mel Tucker losing his job, being inappropriate, and the Board of Trustees at Michigan State now under fire as Brenda Tracy has filed a lawsuit against the Board of Trustees at Michigan State. She's joining us now to talk about it. How you doing?
Hi, John.
Good to hear your voice. I wish we were talking about happier things, though.
Yeah, what is it with us?
I don't know what this is. Let's just start here. I think it's been a really hard few years for you. And can we start by just going back and, maybe can you speak a little bit to what it has been like to be Brenda Tracy in the last few years?
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, honestly. So this whole thing started with the now infamous phone call with him. And that was back in April of 2022.
Okay.
And then during Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which still boggles my mind. Yeah. But, and then I didn't report him. I reported him that year, December 2022. So formally, with the formal complaint, it's been going on since then, and it's now 2025. So it's been going on a long time. The whole process of the RBSM investigation and all that stuff took just over a year for them to finally come back and say that, he was responsible and his appeal was denied and everything. But, in the midst of that, my name got leaked to the media. And then it was just an even more intense hellscape from there. Immediately everything on my calendar got wiped off. Some of it at the request of the schools that had booked me because of, the media. Like it was a big thing. There was just a firestorm of media. And he was sending out these crazy press releases and saying all these horrible things about me. Some of it was canceled due to safety concerns. It's been horrible. My career what I did is over. I now have to dissolve the nonprofit, set the expectation. I've lost my best friend and my business manager through this whole thing. My reputation has been harmed and damaged. I've literally lost everything, John, everything that I built from, coming forward in 2014, thanks to you and the story you did about Oregon State. It's been hell. I'm not going to lie. It's been hell. It's been really, really bad.
I know that how seriously you took sort of the platform that you had. And after the story was published, you changed lives, you founded a nonprofit, you started speaking more. A lot of these schools brought you to their campuses and had you talk to the football programs to give our audience an idea of what you were doing. You're getting paid a speaking fee. You're going to these campuses. You are standing with David Shaw at Stanford, for example, and other coaches around the country. and you're telling the story. You're getting raw and real. And in, you know, I have had athletes say they could hear a pin drop because they're on the edge of their seat because you were getting into such graphic detail about the horrific stuff that you endured. And
yes, it was always that way.
And that was important to you because what? Because you, I think you could have made more money doing some running for office or, you know, being a nurse or, you know, but
oh, for sure.
why was it important to you to spread that message?
Because I didn't want what happened to me to happen to anybody else. And I felt like there was this huge gap in the space I was in, particularly working with men. You know, we always talk about sexual violence and misconduct like it's a women's issue, but most of the perpetrators are men. And for me, it was never about like the victim and the perpetrator. It was about all the people around them. Like, how do we create cultures where predators are not safe to harm victims, survivors are safe to come forward and report, and just talking to our men. And it was never about like, and I never wagged my finger at anybody. I always said, it's not because I think you're the problem. It's because I know that you're the solution. My message was always positive. It was always uplifting. It was always engaging. Every time I would get done, I would have a line of football players and coaches and staff saying, thank you for coming. I never thought about it that way. My eyes are open. Like, what can I do? How can I help? Like, I had great success in my career, quite frankly. I don't know that I realized it at the time, but I think now that I've lost everything, I think I look back and I think, wow, I did a lot of good things. I was on over 100 campuses. I had this stellar reputation. Like, if people think it's easy to get into some of the rooms that I was in, especially being a woman and being a survivor of sexual violence, they're wrong. It's not easy to get in those rooms. And I got in those rooms based on my reputation and based on how hard I work and how good of a job I did. And it was all word of mouth. And you know me, like, I'm a straight shooter. I would even call people out if they were being wrong. And I was never blackballed during my career because I was saying things that other people knew was right.
Brenda, who are some of the coaches who were just great, who became advocates, who became allies for the message?
Oh, well, the first person I obviously think of is Coach Shaw. I can't even speak about my career at all without thinking about Coach Shaw. I mean, he always got it. He was always really, and it's so sad that he's not in college football anymore, because really for him, it was really about the young man. He never was about making them commodities. Winning was important, but not more important than the humanity and the well-being of his players, which I always really loved about him. Coach Chad Morris was great. I worked with him when he was at SMU in Arkansas. I know he didn't have a great record over there. There's been a lot of coaches. You know, UTSA was always a great school that I was always at. Coach Traylor over there was wonderful. The president, Lisa Campos, the athletic director, she's amazing over there. I'm trying to think of other people off the top of my head, but there's some good coaches out there. And I want to say, you know, I worked with thousands of coaches during my career and tens of thousands of athletes. And I just ran into this one coach that did this. So it's not all the coaches, you know what I mean?
Yes. I know that in 2021, Michigan State invites you to come to campus. They're paying you a speaking fee of approximately $10,000 to come introduce this program to their school. This is where I think you encounter Mel Tucker. You tell the story of this brutal gang rape in 1998. He talks to you, according to the court filing, and says, we should bring you back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, he actually had one of his people on his team had actually contacted me when he was at Colorado. And he wanted to work with me when he was over there, but decided not to because of, like, you know, COVID and some other things happening or whatever. Then so when he went to Michigan State, He reached out again, and I hadn't been to Michigan State yet, but I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity for me to go to that campus with the new coach, you know, get acquainted. And the reason I hadn't been at Michigan State is we all know the history of Michigan State, right? There's a lot of history there as far as sexual violence and everything.
Yep, terrible.
Yeah, and so I had a lot of reverence for the campus, and I had a lot of respect for the survivors, and I wanted to be very careful about the way I did my work on that campus. I didn't want to go in there with, like, you know, people who had problematic issues, right? Izzo's had some issues, D'Antonio had some issues, and I wanted to be respectful. So for me, I saw this opportunity with Tucker to be like, okay, this is a good in. It's a new coach. Let's just set the expectation, like, right now, right? And he was completely on board. I went there. He sat front row. He listened to the story that thousands of people across the country have listened to about what happened to me. And he was floored. And after, it was like, he was like, I want to be like Coach Shaw. I have a bigger platform. I want to help you, whatever I can do for your nonprofit. I mean, he just immediately was like, I want this to be like one of my main focuses, and I want to help you. I think you're brilliant, and I want to be that guy.
Do you think at that point he's coming from a good place, or is he already starting
Absolutely.
To say, okay.
No, the first visit that I was there, and actually after the visit, like, he took me back to my hotel to drop me off, and we sat in his truck for like an hour talking. And I left that campus thinking, oh my gosh, I finally found the coach that's like going to help me take this movement to the next level, right? Because a lot of the work I do, I can't get done without the help of the people in college athletics. And he was really like, I'm going to help your nonprofit. I know all these people. Like, even Magic, you know, Magic Johnson, he knows all these people, they're going to help, and what projects are you doing? And I think that's the thing where people don't understand, is he made it like we're going to be some kind of dynamic duo. And I was excited. I was so excited, John, because I've been grinding and grinding and grinding and trying to get people on board and trying to get people to care. And I thought that I kind of found that person, and I was super excited about it.
At what point did it turn... Or did eyebrows get raised with, hey, wait a minute, he may have other ideas?
So one of the first things that happened was he did FaceTime me. In the very, very beginning, he FaceTimed me from home. And he was in his bed without a shirt on. He had, like, the blankets up over him. And I was immediately uncomfortable. And he knew I was uncomfortable on that call. And we never FaceTimed again after that. And he knew I was uncomfortable. And I was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, this is weird. Like, where's your wife? Like, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of tried to play it off. But I set a boundary. And I thought that he respected it. And so I didn't really think that much of it after. Because, I mean, it's not like men don't hit on me in my field, right? Like, men have hit on me. They've made passes at me or whatever, expressed interest in me. I think that sometimes men don't know how to approach women and just kind of be honest. So for me, I just felt like he was kind of fishing, right? Kind of see how I would respond. And I kind of set a boundary, and usually men always respect my boundaries. I had never had anyone cross my boundary in, like, you know, 8-9 years. So I was just kind of like, okay, not a big deal, right? And so I just kind of let it. I just kind of let it go. Further on later, and in between, sometimes he would send, like, you know, pictures of me and be like, you know, you look really pretty, whatever, something, or, you know, he would say little stuff. But I was kind of like, well, it's not that big of a deal, right? Like, I continue to say, like, hey, we're just friends, that kind of thing. But then what happened was in I think it was November. Yeah, it was November. I was on my way to UTSA. He had asked me, he said, and this is a point of contention for people, there's a Venmo that people are so upset with me about. So when I was at the airport, he had called and he was like, are you good? Do you have everything you need? Where are you going? And I was like, I'm going to UTSA. And he was like, oh, well, let me send you like some money and go get nice dinner tonight or whatever. And I was like, no, that's okay. Like, I'm good. And he's like, no. Like, you always do things for other people. Let somebody be nice to you. It's not a big deal. And so he convinced me to let him Venmo me. I thought he was going to send like, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 bucks. He sent 200. And I did feel like, I should send this back. But then I also didn't want to be like weird about it. But the problem is right after he sent it, John, like right after he sent it, he said to me, I want to ask you something and I don't want it to be weird. And I promise I'll never bring it up again. And I was like, okay. And he was like, if I wasn't married and I wasn't a football coach, would you date me? I shouldn't be cussing. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh no. And then, so I said, well, it doesn't matter because we work together and like nothing can ever happen. Like it's a non-issue, right? Like we've already worked together. I've already been to the campus. Yeah. Like,
and this is a text exchange. This is a text exchange?
No, this is a phone call. Oh, this is a phone call. This is a phone call. So I tell him, so I set boundaries. And then I immediately got off the phone and I called my best friend who was also my business manager. I was like, oh no, like Tucker likes me. And he just asked me this question and I was worried about it. I was like, what do I do? And she's like, well, you're going to have to like really make sure he understands. Cause at that point I was concerned. I'm like, okay, does he want to be part of the campaign and everything because he wants to, or is he doing it just because he likes me? I was very like, not sure what was going on. So I called again, probably a week or two later. And we had a long conversation and I was like, look, nothing can ever happen between us. It can't even look like anything could be going on. If anything happened, like you'll survive this scandal. I wouldn't. Like my reputation is everything. Like I don't. And I told him at that time, I was like, I don't date coaches. I'm single on purpose. I was like beating a dead horse on that phone call. And he was like, I get it. I respect you. It's fine. I'm down for the cause, all this stuff. And I got off that phone feeling like, oh, cool. Like, we're fine. Everything's fine. And I text my friend to say, like, hey, we had a heart-to-heart. It's all good. He's cool for the cause. And I thought everything at that point was fine, honestly.
It continues to escalate, though. And there's some text exchange between you and your business manager who you're telling, hey, you know, I've had this conversation with him. We're straight. You know, he continues to pressure you to meet up. He wanted you to leave the hotel at one point when you were in East Lansing and come meet him on some back entrance, and you said no. And, you know, your manager is there for that. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's when it got bad because so they set up the spring game for me to come, and I thought things were okay. We went out there for a spring game to raise awareness. Like, I've done set the expectation games at Stanford. I did those with Coach Shaw for, like, 7 years.
Yep.
So we went out there, myself and my manager, we went out there. Obviously at that point I was like, I thought things were okay. I thought that like we were on the same page about everything, but it wasn't until after the game when he was calling me that night. He called me 4 times trying to get me to leave the hotel and meet him alone. And it was in the presence of my friend and business manager. She heard the conversation. And so I kept saying no. And yeah, he asked, you know, can you come to my house? Can I come through the back door of the hotel? He wanted me to meet him. Meet me in my truck. Like, it just was like, no, like I'm not going anywhere by myself with you. Like my assistant needs to come with us. And he, at one point, said, well, what does she think we're going to do, have sex? And at that point, I was just like, oh, my God. Like, this is never, you know what I mean? This has never been okay. It was very clear to me in that moment. It had never been okay. And I felt very defeated and very upset about it. And, like, the next day, he did a presser, or maybe it was that day, and he said, yeah, Brenda's in town. He never even said anything about what we were doing or anything. It was really, really disappointing.
At this point, are you feeling stuck? Because on one hand, they're committed to having you come back multiple times and visit. On the other hand, you know Mel Tucker's mind is not in the right place. And it culminates.
He's not what I thought he was. So at that point, I didn't understand how bad it was, I think, at that point. I certainly never thought that he would, like, really cross a line, right? Like, cross a line that I would have to, like, report behavior. My plan from there was just to kind of do my best to distance myself from him, right? Like, not okay. answer his phone calls. If I was going to be on campus, I would always have my assistant with me, never be alone with him. And I was really just going to try to have as little interaction with him as possible, but also mm-hmm. without making him mad, without making him feel, because here's the thing, he's the gatekeeper to my entire career, really, not just the MSU campus, but John, you and I both know, all he has to do is say to another coach, hey, you need to be careful around Brenda. And for a lot of coaches, that's enough for them to never work with me. So I was really in a position where I really needed to make sure that his ego was okay. And I was always, and I was concerned about that, like not making him mad. So I was just going to try to, yeah, just kind of distance myself as much as possible and go on about doing my work without upsetting him. And so when I talked to him again, at the end of April, when the call happened, my intention on that call was just to again reiterate, like, hey, we are just friends. Nothing can ever happen, that kind of thing. And just try to make sure that we were still like on a good page, because I didn't really know how he felt after I left the spring game. I wasn't sure if he was mad at me or not for what had happened, or actually what had not happened.
Right. And what ends up, the straw that broke the camel's back is ultimately he's on the phone. And he's masturbating. Was it a yeah. FaceTime or is it a phone call?
No, it's just an audio phone call. We never FaceTime again after that. We're on the phone, and his voice got weird, like kind of deep and weird. And it was strange. And I was like, what are you doing? And then I could hear it. Like, it was loud, like very loud. Yeah.
Okay, so he wanted you to know what he was doing.
He absolutely 1,000% wanted me to know what he was doing. Absolutely. And I think that was the thing. Well, one, it was shocking to me. I never thought that this would happen. When I look back on it now, what I realize is that he realized he was never going to get me alone. He realized at the spring game he was never going to get me alone to try to coerce me into doing whatever it is he wanted to do to me. And the only way at that point he could violate me was over the phone. So that's what he chose to do in that moment, because he knew I was never going to be alone with him.
He has to be the dumbest football coach that I've ever, his career. Midnight Mel, we thought the worst thing that he did was leave Colorado in the middle of the night, but he had left destruction in his wake.
You know, I think people call him dumb a lot. You know, like, how stupid could he be to, like, sexually harass us? They call me the sexual harassment lady. But I think if you look at this in the context of, like, sexual harassment and sexual violence is about, for the perpetrator, it's about power and control. And it's about degradation and humiliation of the victim, right? If you're talking about power, like a power move, what is a bigger power move than to sexually harass me or harm me, right?
Yeah.
And then, because then the next call I had with him was when he threatened me, right? Because he knew that I'm a person that speaks out, but he really thought he could threaten me into silence. And so for me, that's how I look at it. I don't just look at it as him being dumb. I look at it as him being predatory and intentional, that he knew what he was doing. And he knew who he was doing it to.
Brenda, I got about 5 minutes here. I want to deal with the new part of the new lawsuit that was filed. You are suing the Board of Trustees at Michigan State. They had an obligation and a duty to keep your identity private, and it did not stay private, and you were subjected to harassment. It was Michigan State fans, it was phone calls, it was message boards, it was social media, it was how bad did it get?
Oh, people were sending me pictures of my home they were sending me names of family members. They were texting my phone. It was bad. It was scary. It was scary. Yeah. I mean, there was Clay Travis was saying I should go to jail. Like, I mean, you know, there was like right wingers that were like all riled up and, you know, it was bad. It was scary. I actually hid out for a little while just to make sure that my family was safe.
I think you and I had a phone call on one of those nights and you were in tears and, you know, I had just called to check on you and you tried to stay strong and you broke down pretty early in the call. And you know, for people who are wondering, a lot was made too, Brenda, of, oh, Mel Tucker and Brenda talked late at night. That's when you talk. You and I have had, you know, dozens of conversations at 10 o'clock at night and there's nothing weird about it, you know, and it's
no.
Just, you know, it's.
And not only that, John, but like I'm on the West Coast. He's on the East Coast. So like what's late for him is not late for me. And I'm sorry, but like he's a power at that time. He's a Power Five coach, right? When he has time for me, I make time in my schedule for him, right? Like, this is a person that is, like, it was a professional thing. It wasn't a big deal. But, yeah, I'm a night owl. Like, if that's when he has time, then I'm gonna make myself available at whatever time. I don't have regular office hours. I mean, I just think that whole part of it is so stupid to me.
Yeah. And so the Board of Trustees, how do you think your name got leaked, or what do you, when you try to trace back the origin of, you know, where it broke down for Michigan State, it's really at the center of this lawsuit. Where do you think that was?
Well, the trustees knew about the investigation from, I think, like day one that he was under investigation. I believe that they were also told it was a vendor. So when you look at vendors in college football, like there's not very many women vendors that are working with the team. So I think it was probably easily deduced, but I also think that there, in one of the reports, the board knew that he was under investigation for sexual harassment. I think one of the things I point to is a plane trip to a basketball game where the chair of the trustees, Vassar, was on a private jet with Ishbia and Tucker the day after Tucker did his interview with the investigator back in March. I didn't know at the time, but Ishbia knew who I was, too.
And this is so, Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Phoenix Suns, big-time donor at Michigan State. Wow.
Billionaire donor. His mortgage company, the general counsel of his mortgage company, was actually part of the case. They told OIE at the school to send all information through him. So Ishbia knew my name. Tucker obviously knows what's going on with the case. You know, Vassar's on the plane. To think that they didn't talk about the case the day after his investigation.
It's ridiculous. Of course they did.
It's not plausible that they didn't talk about it.
Brenda.
So, yeah, I think that started there.
We're going to run out of time here, but I would encourage people, you know, to read the story. Kenny Jacoby of USA Today has done a nice job covering this story. So has the Michigan State outlets that are covering it. And I'm just proud of you, and I think a lot of people in our audience are proud of you for standing up for what you believe in and staying strong. And, you know, I am sorry this all happened to you, and Mel Tucker ought to be ashamed of himself.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm sure we'll talk again. There's more to come, right?
Yeah, always is. Brenda Tracy, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you, John.
All right, there she goes. She has filed a lawsuit, and she has named in this lawsuit the Board of Trustees at Michigan State, included among that some current members of the Board of Trustees, along with Dennis Denmo and Rema Vassar, named as defendants in this lawsuit. Brenda Tracy, on a continued fight, shouldn't be this hard, should it? Leave it here. Our big splash coming up.